to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 219. That's right, 219 episodes of the Cultural Hall. And on the phone with me right now is Nadia Christine, an artist with a social cause. Is that fair to surmise you as that?
Sure, that would be fine.
Nadia is a student at BYU, a return missionary, and has an amazing voice, which we'll get to here in just a little bit. Thank you for joining me.
No, thank you so much for having me, Richie. I appreciate it.
You have a song, Hit Undo, which I mentioned we will play here in just a little bit so people can hear exactly how amazing your voice is. They're hearing it now. But I want to ask you, before we go any further, tell me about Nadia. Where are you from? What's your upbringing?
No, of course. So I'm from South Jordan, Utah. And my claim to fame, I guess you could say, is that my mother's from Colombia. And so I'm half Colombian, and that brought up a lot of fun bicultural traditions in my family. And like you said, I'm currently now a student at BYU, and I just always love to sing and play sports on the side.
So did mom and dad meet on a mission?
Oh, great question. My mom actually came to the United States when she was 18, and they met at Elvis Business College.
Okay. One of those love at first sight things. But here's the deal. Colombia is one of those, like, get shot countries, right?
They're one of the get shot countries, that we said?
Yes. Isn't it one of the ones where there's not missionaries in Colombia anymore?
Oh, no. Well, there are missionaries now, but it is definitely kind of like a get shot country. You want to be careful. It's a little bit dangerous. Honestly, Rissy, we didn't even go there for a really long time. Just recently, we had the opportunity to go because it's a little bit safer now than it has been in many years. So, but yes, I mean, I love the culture.
What was that like going down there?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I think it was more special for me just because I was coming home and seeing family members that I had never met before, you know, that I've spoken to over Facebook or had conversations with over Christmas Skype, but it was really neat to actually meet them, and it was unlike any other experience. Other experiences when we go, we may travel or go to tourist areas, but that was just different because we actually stayed inside the homes and experienced the actual culture. So it was a really humbling and a beautiful experience.
When you say family, are you talking like these are your aunts and uncles and like grandparents or who?
Oh, no, great question. More extended families. You know how Tongan families are huge? They've got cousins of cousins of cousins.
Uh-huh.
Latin families are pretty similar. We've got second cousins and third cousins and the twice removed brother, sister. And we're all super close, super tight. And so anyways, I just met a lot of them.
What made your mom come at the age of 18 from Colombia to the United States and to Utah in particular?
No, great question. My mother always had a dream. She's one of those incredible people, one of those stories that you'll hear about. She had a dream to basically have a better future for her family. She didn't have the means to come to the United States, and everybody told her that there's no way that she could make it, that they're too poor, the family wouldn't make it, and she just worked and worked and worked, and she said, you know what, I'm going to make it there, and she really did. She worked hard enough, and she got her visa, and she came to the United States, and she helped her family, her immediate family members, come to Utah. And she came to Utah specifically because she's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And there were other members of the church that were there in Utah that were willing to help house her for the first few months while she was there.
Was she converted then down in Colombia?
Actually, my grandfather's the one who converted. Funny story, the name Nadia is Arabic because my great-grandfather comes from Lebanon. So he was tired of the Muslim culture, so he escaped to Colombia, and my grandfather grew up atheist, and from there he met the missionaries. He actually hated them at first, but then did meet them, listened to all the discussions in one night, and had a complete change of heart and wanted to get baptized. And from there, that's where the church starts on my mom's side.
So then your grandpa then being kind of the pioneer, then your mom, obviously, and now you.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Now, where did you, you're a return missionary, where did you serve?
I served in Lima, Peru, in Lima Central.
What's that like in comparison to Colombia?
I think they're pretty similar. I just feel like there's small cultural differences between Peruvians and Colombians. I absolutely loved the culture down in Peru. I love the food. They have incredible food. I mean, I love Colombian food, too, so don't tell my mom that I really, really love Peruvian food. Actually, she'll probably hear this on the podcast anyway, but I love Peruvian food. And it was just, they're just really heartwarming and just very welcoming. And that was another experience in my life where it was just very humbling to actually live inside of a third world circumstance, and not only for just a couple of weeks or a month like we had in Colombia, but for 18 months. And so that was just a really humbling and very neat experience for me to be there.
How recently are you returned?
Ever since last November.
Okay,
so we're coming up to a year almost.
So you're one that was affected then by the age change, yeah? You wouldn't have been able to go if the age change wouldn't have happened?
Correct. Yeah, I left at age 20, so just a little bit after the age change.
How do you feel about that?
The age change?
Yeah.
I think that it's fantastic. I think that it's fantastic that there's an opportunity for girls to go on a mission. I definitely think that it's a decision that each woman needs to make on her own, and that it's between her and her Heavenly Father. Because there's definitely, it's not a bad thing to not go, and it's not a bad thing to go. I mean, I just feel like it's a personal decision that each woman can make with God. I don't think that every girl needs to go. I would just invite probably every girl to just find out and ask God for herself if she should go. And if she feels that it's right, then that's wonderful. If she feels that it's not right, then that's wonderful. I think either way is completely fine.
You know, you're down in BYU, which is sort of the heart of Mormon country. Do you see, I feel like I feel it, and maybe I just am imposing my own thoughts about it, but do you feel like there is now a social pressure which once only existed for gentlemen to serve missions, but now for the ladies to serve missions too?
Yes, Richie. Hence my comments that I think that it'd be fine that every girl should ask, but there should not be any social pressure there shouldn't be any guilt if she's not going, or if she's made the decision that it's not right for her. That I would recommend the experience, and that it's one of the best decisions of my life, of course. And I absolutely loved it, of course. But I definitely think that it's a decision that each girl needs to make between her and God.
Were there difficult times for you?
In my mission?
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Like
most
what?
Definitely.
Like what?
Let's see. I think every once in a while, any missionary will tell you that they'll have a hard companion. And so I definitely had maybe a hard companion or two. I got along with just almost all of them. So I think that's one thing that any return missionary or any missionary might run into. Another thing, talking about the food, I love the food, but they serve you so much food.
Yeah.
So much food all the time. And sometimes we would get sick. Meaning like sick, physically sick from having to eat so much. And I remember that it's a very unique and funny struggle to have, but it was something that a lot of missionaries would get sick because they would be fed so much food. So, I mean, there's unique struggles to each mission, but it is completely worth it. It's worth the cockroaches and the spiders that you'll find in your room. Mm-hmm. It's worth the sweaty, hot, humid days. It's worth it because the experiences are just, they're priceless. I mean, sitting in the front seat of watching how the atonement is a miracle through people's lives is worth any struggle that you might go through on a mission.
The challenge with having to eat too much, was that because you didn't want to insult the culture? Is that essentially what it is? They'd provide it for you and it was insulting if you didn't eat it?
Correct. Yes. Oh. I mean, and especially because they come from humble circumstances, so they're serving you everything, almost everything that they have. And they'll be serving you more than what they're serving their children. And you know that their children are hungry. And it is the hardest experience because you don't want to accept it. You want to tell them, no, please, I mean, just give it to your children. We're fine. We can eat when we get home. But like you said, it's culturally offensive not to accept it.
You talk about some of the greatest experiences. Share one, if you would. Just an experience from your mission that was like, this was amazing. This was front seat of the atonement, which, by the way, I like that kind of visual.
Oh, thank you. No, one experience that comes immediately to my mind is, this was actually my very last area with my last companion. And we were just weeks before ending my mission. We were walking down the street, and we saw a man who was just standing at his door, And, I mean, we had just barely, we had walked past him, but we both felt that we needed to turn around and talk to him. So we did turn around and we talked to him. And first of all, it's unusual. In Lima Central, it's unusual for people to be standing at their front doors because it is, I mean, it has such a high rate of crime and robbery. So people don't just sit around in front of their doors. They're actually always behind their barred doors or barred windows. So we went up and talked to him, and he turned to us and he said, "Are you guys the type of people that help other people with problems?" And I looked at my companion and I just smiled and I was like, "Yeah,
sure, yes, sure. Yes, you bet we are.
we help people with problems. I mean, through the gospel. Tell us what's going on." And he said, "Well, I hope you have time to come back and talk to me because I have a lot of problems." Hmm. And we were like, "Of course. Go ahead." And so he went on to explain to us. This man was drinking a liter of alcohol every single day.
Wow.
And he had recently lost his wife and children because of it. They had separated away from him. He had lost his job for it. And he was now selling furniture inside his home so that he could buy alcohol because the addiction was so bad. And he had told us that he had done a few suicide attempts too that were unsuccessful. And he said, "I don't know why I'm still alive, but for some reason I'm still alive and I'm trying to figure it out." And as we went on to explain to him the atonement and how there literally is a man that God sent, his son, Jesus Christ, who has sacrificed for all of our sins that we may have an opportunity to have a second chance in life and to have moments where we can start over and be clean from our past, I will never forget this moment, Richie. I mean, this grown man, just tears streaming down his face, and just almost, I mean, his lips are throbbing, and he just says, "That really can happen to me? I can really have a second chance?" And that was the beginning of a journey of having the opportunity and the privilege to watch the atonement work in this man's life as we had the opportunity to teach him these lessons. And it was just a really neat personal experience for me because my family had the opportunity to come down and meet me at the end of my mission. And through some coordination to the bishops, my brother ended up having the opportunity to baptize this man. And it was just a very, very neat experience as we watched him. And the other miracle, Richie, is that after that first time that we had contact, from that point until his baptism, he never had a drop of alcohol again.
Hmm.
And he had had this addiction since he was 15 years old, and we're talking about a 40, 45-year-old man.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was just, the miracle obviously wasn't us. The miracle was a power far greater than ours, and that was God.
You know, that leads right into, and we didn't talk about this beforehand, but that story leads right into this song and this video that you have produced. It's called Hit Undo. And it's all about the addiction recovery program. So what I want to do right now, so that we are referencing something that people have heard, I'm going to play a good chunk of it. I'm going to play a good chunk of it right now. And then and then we can come back and we'll talk about more about the song, why you did it, what you hope to accomplish with it. And we can talk a little bit about Kobe Farron, who's also a part of it. And then in the second block here of the Cultural Hall, we'll actually be talking with him as well. So let's play a little of the song and then we'll come back.
Okay, fantastic.
Rip these chains off, but it feels like trying to make a train stop. Brain is going insane in pain. It's a brainstorm, feel the rain drop. Drop, drop, dropping down, trying to search for my life in the lost and found. And I know who has it too, so with head bowed, I'm coming back to you.
I never thought it'd get this far.
So far.
I never thought it'd hurt so hard.
Never thought it hurt so, 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 so.
All right, so the song is called Hit Undo, and I really, really love the video. And you can find that link at theculturalhall.com. We've linked the video with this episode so people can check it out. It's all about exactly what you were telling that guy, a second chance. You can hit undo. You get another opportunity with Christ and with the atonement.
Yeah, most definitely. Is
this just a way for you to continue your mission throughout your life? Why doing this now? A lot of times people will come home and then they kind of pursue other interests.
No, great question. I guess through growing up, I've always wanted to be a singer, and I've always kind of wondered how I would do it. I mean, when I was really little, I used to curl my hair just like Taylor Swift. I would crimp my hair,
uh-huh.
and I'd put on a lot of mascara, and I'd look at myself in the mirror, and I'd just start singing in the mirror, and I would think that I was just like, I'm going to be a singer one day. But I'd always been searching for a way that I could become a singer and share my love and my passion for music while still holding the standards and beliefs that I believe in. And I just find that in the industry, in the growing music industries, that can get harder and harder depending on the route of the music industry that you choose to take. So I've always just been trying to search for a way to do it. And right before my mission, when we were about to release a few songs, I remember that I was actually in an LDS temple, and I was thinking about what we could do for the music videos. And all of a sudden, it just came to me for one of my songs to do it for Anti-Bullying, and then another one for Woman in Inner Beauty, and another one for like a Pay It Forward. And those are my three videos that I'd released. And then it just hit me that was what I was going to be doing, that I would be writing music for causes, and that would be a way that I could use my music and use my talents and use it for good and be in control with the way that I use it and still hold on to the standards and beliefs that I believe in. And so throughout my mission, I had received several inspiration ideas of things that I wanted to do when I came home for my music career. And ever since I came home, I've just been so excited to start doing it. And I just feel like, I mean, Heavenly Father's just been opening door after door, and things are just happening the way I think that He wants them to happen.
Musical influence, is that from your mom, your dad, just something you've picked up yourself?
Great question. My dad always likes to say that he coined it, but he doesn't like to sing at all. I think it's funny. My little brother likes to sing, but I don't know if it comes directly from somebody. I think I've got a great grandmother on my mother's side, and she was a big singer, according to the family history and the stories that my mom tells me. I think she's like a great-great-great-grandma or something like that. And I have a couple of second cousins on my dad's side, and they perform in a lot of MDT and singing. But that it comes directly from my parents and from my grandparents, no, it doesn't.
But definitely something that you can tell as you hear, you know, as we heard in that little bit that we played, definitely very gifted, very talented. One of the things that God has given you for sure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Richie. I appreciate it.
So it's social causes then, right? I think it's so awesome to know, or that you know what you want to do with it. Were you one of the lucky missionaries that got to be able to explore your musical talents on the mission, or was mission president like, it's about teaching the gospel?
Oh, no, great question. Yes, I had the opportunity to do several music things on my mission. First of all, So down in Peru, when you get on buses, a lot of times random people will get onto the bus and they'll sing songs,
uh-huh.
and then they'll go around the bus and ask for money, right? And this is probably my first transfer in the mission. So I turned to my trainer and I was like, hey, what if I did that? What if I got up there inside of the bus and I just started singing hymns? And I said, I won't ask for money. Instead of asking for money, we'll just hand them out pass along cards. And she looked at me and she said, Imana Lawrence, you're crazy. I was like, no, really, we should do it. It'd be really fun. And she said, if you want to do it, you can get up there and do it. And I think she was expecting me not to do it.
But right.
I stood up, and she was totally surprised. And I stood up, and I just started singing in the bus. And it was just, and her face, she looked at me, and then she looked around in embarrassment that I was actually doing it. But I used to do it, and I did it a lot throughout my first and second transfers. And it was just really fun. I would just get up on buses and just start singing hymns, and then we'd share a testimony on the bus and give pass-along cards. And we would just do that in between appointments that we would go to. And that was a really fun experience. Another fun experience was that there was a piano in a park, and it was just a piano to advertise a piano store, basically. So a few times we would go to that park and I would sing and play there, and sometimes it would attract a crowd, and then we would teach the people that were there listening. And the mission president was really nice to me. Several times he allowed me to direct choirs for big conferences that were coming up, and so there's probably about 8 or 10 opportunities where I was able to direct like a missionary choir or state choirs to do musical numbers for specific conferences. So I felt really grateful that I had opportunities to use music in the mission.
This video, the hit Undo, where it deals with the addiction recovery, is it something that the church contacted you or something that you just said, you know what, I'm doing this?
No, the church didn't contact me about it. As I was writing the song, it just sparked to me that the song would go to addiction. I just knew it. It just felt so right that it would go towards addiction. And then I would love to do missionary work through the music, and I just thought it would be wonderful to just promote the 12-step program that the church offers. And I had the opportunity to visit a few of the meetings, and I was so humbled and just in awe to see how incredible these meetings are that the church offers, and the influence and the effect that it's having on so many individuals around the world. And so I just thought that it was just a wonderful way to just try to help anybody who might be suffering through addiction to find a program where they really can receive help, and not only help, but with a focus that Heavenly Father is the main source of power, where we can get that power to stop.
This might be tremendously personal question, so feel free to not answer it if you don't feel comfortable.
No,
you talked
okay.
about the gentleman on your mission who dealt with addiction, then coming back to the States and having the opportunity to attend classes, the addiction recovery classes. Is addiction and addiction recovery something that strikes closer to home with you?
Oh, great question. Yes, it does. And actually, that's why this video has a really very personal meaning. To me and my family, you'll see that there's actually the boy or the man that's featured inside the video. And I'm not talking about the people that have the signs. I'm talking about all the storyline shots. And that is actually my cousin. And his story is actually the story that we're showing is actually his real story. He did, my uncle had passed away. And after that, And I did speak to him previously about talking about this, and he was completely fine with me talking about this. But when my uncle had passed away, which shows like the graveyard shots in the music video, mm-hmm. at that point he had gotten into harder drugs such as cocaine and heroin, and into heavy drinking. And it was just an experience for me to share with my cousin, where we had talked about using his story to inspire other people that they can get through addiction, and he is he's still doing his absolute best, and he's gone through rehab centers, and he has overcome heroin and cocaine, and he's just a living example to me that really change is possible, and that we do have the power to press forward, and we do have the power to have second chances in our life. And that's why I really wanted to feature him in this video. And yeah, I mean, it's a very personal touch in this video, I guess you could say, and it hits very close to home for me and my family.
As you have attended the classes, the 12-step addiction recovery classes, I don't know how many you've been to, but is there anything that impresses you particularly from that the program that the church does?
Yes. I love how the first 20 or 30 minutes, it might be just they're talking about a principle, one of the 12 steps, and then they spend the last 30 to 45 minutes, depending on the length of the meeting, and allowing anybody in the room, if voluntarily, if they'd like to share their experiences. And I'm a very big advocate in allowing people, enabling people to be taught from each other. I think that it's sometimes ineffective when there's a teacher who only talks and then people listen, and perhaps they won't receive everything that they can get out of it. But when you're in a room where you have an open discussion and you can hear each other's stories and learn from each other's experiences, I feel like people learn so much more, and that is what impressed me so much when I sat through some of these meetings, just hearing their experiences And, of course, there was no pressure in everyone to share. It was very voluntarily, but very comfortable. And a lot of them were very comfortable in sharing their stories. And I could just see the faces of other people just like a light of hope in their eyes that they weren't the only ones going through those kind of struggles. So I would say that is definitely the part that impressed me the most about the program.
I had the opportunity to go a little while ago. A friend of mine asked me to go with him. And it was interesting because at first I think I was... You know, you get this feeling where you go in and you're like, man, I hope people don't think that I'm here. You know, it's uncomfortable and it's weird to say, but you know, you're like, well, I hope people don't think that I'm here for me because I'm just here to help this guy. And it's super like self-focused. And it was interesting as I kind of let that go. And like you said, the principle's taught, and then it's the opportunity for people to just share their very raw, oftentimes very heartbreaking stories. And then it became very much for me an opportunity where I was like, yeah, you know, okay, so maybe I don't have an addiction in my life, but this is so beneficial for me from feeling the spirit or also just being able to look at the things that I do struggle with. And there are those same principles again. If you've never been to an addiction recovery meeting, people listening to this, they have them everywhere. They're all the time. If you feel comfortable, I think it's a tremendous spiritual experience, not only to learn about what those that may be struggling are going through, but also to be able to learn about yourself as you hear those stories.
Yeah. Yes, I completely agree, Richie. And it's interesting that you say that because I had a very similar experience as I attended these meetings. After a while, it just hit me that, you know what, we all have imperfections, and whether it be addiction or not, the principles that they were teaching about the atonement and about how we can really repent and that we can come and have a new life and that we can honestly just basically wipe our mistakes clean through an honest and sincere repentance. It's just incredible, and that's a message that anybody can hear. I would recommend it for anybody to learn of that program. It's absolutely incredible.
I want to talk about a couple things, and then I want to let you go because I know you've got things. I've got things. We still got to talk to Colby and talk about his experience in this. What is the Daddy Come Home Foundation?
Oh, great question. The Daddy Come Home Foundation is a foundation that I had the opportunity to start. I co-founded it with my mom when I was 15 years old. And basically what we do is we honor families of fallen soldiers every year. Once a year, we'll hold a ceremony, and this year we will be holding it on November 11th at 11:10 a.m., and it will be held at LDS Business College. And basically, in essence, we will honor 4 to 5 families. We choose these families each year through the Survivor Outreach Services, and we will invite a political or a keynote speaker to come. In the past, we've had Attorney General Shurtleff or General Atack or different people, Senator Butters, who have come. And we honor the families. We let them know that they're not forgotten, whether their loved one had died 8 years ago or 10 years ago or 2 months ago. We want them to know that they're not forgotten. And so that's just an event that we've been putting on for probably about 4 or 5 years now.
If people want to get the song Hit Undo, they listen to it, or they want to follow you can find Nadia Christine on YouTube. There, again, is the link at theculturalhall.com. People can find it at iTunes and the Google Play Store, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct, in the iTunes store, yep.
Okay. And then a few maybe lighter questions as we kind of wrap this out. And then maybe a heavy question. I don't know. I don't pick how this goes. We don't know.
okay, sounds good.
You've been home almost a year. Are we getting this marriage thing done? I feel like the window may be closing. I feel like you got to get that done pretty quick.
Oh, dear. I'm dating. I'm just out and about dating. That's all.
Okay. So no closer now to the old MRS degree as you were before you left. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'm not closer to the MRS degree yet.
Okay. Because they say that's one of the highest sought after degrees at BYU. So I just wanted to see how that was going for you. Have you been on just a terrible date? You don't have to tell who the person was, but just tell me, share with me the woes of dating at BYU.
Oh, no, let's see. Just a terrible date. I can't think of one in particular, but I think a definition of a terrible date is when you go out on a date and you are just dying for conversation. You know, when you ask somebody a question and they give you a one-word answer, and then you just sit in silence, and you're like, okay, that's great, that's awesome. And then you ask them another question, and you just get these really short answers, and you just, it's just like you're struggling for conversation. It just doesn't happen. I think that's probably the definition, where there's just, when you just can't have a conversation, that's a tough date.
It's one
you're just waiting to go back.
It's one of those things, too, where it's like, I wonder if I text this person if they would be better. Like, maybe it's this face-to-face thing that they're struggling with. Maybe it was Messenger, we'd be all right.
Oh, it's so sad that's so true. It's one of my pet peeves, Reggie. I shouldn't say this on publicly, but it's a pet peeve of mine when I get asked out over a text. I just think if a man is confident enough, he should be able to either at least call me or ask me in person at the moment that he meets me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that, I don't know, I guess you could call me old-fashioned, but I just think everything over text is just, I just think that we can do better.
No, come on, it sets the standard, though, because if he asks you out, here's the deal, here's why we do it. If he asks you out via the text message, then he can break up with you via the text message, and it's not that big a deal, right?
Oh, that's terrible.
Hey, We're done. ... See ya. And he doesn't even spell out see ya. He doesn't even spell out see ya. It's just the letter C and YA. See ya.
And then if they're kind enough, they might add an emoji at the end of that.
I'm sorry you have to go through that. That is absolutely terrible. But one of the things, so I'm recently divorced and single and dating, and it's one of the things that I have found absolutely fascinating is where it's, you know, we use the phrase, oh, yeah, I'm interested in someone, right? Like, oh, are you interested? Oh, yeah, I'm interested in that person. And it's so funny to me because I fall in that sweet mid-singles range, which is like the land of broken toys from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And I meet people who are so awesome, I'm sure, right? They're the most amazing people in their own right, I'm sure. And then you talk to them and you want to be interested so badly. And you ask them, hey, what did you do today? And they say, I worked.
Yes.
And that's it.
Exactly,
and you,
what I mean.
And you go, well, cool, great. All right. So, you know what? We're done. Have you done any of the, can we just be done with this date yet?
Yes, I think that's happened in the past. I think sometimes it's just like I was saying, when you can't have conversation, that is just a terrible day.
Yeah.
And you're just waiting for the moment to go home.
Ugh.
And you know what's another terrible day is when you have somebody that you can't have conversation with, but they planned out probably a 5 or 6 hour date. You know what I'm talking about? The dates that are like, first we're going to go to dinner.
Sure.
And then after that, we're going to go ice skating. And then after that, we're going to go in and get some dessert. And then after that, we're going to run by my apartment so we can pick this up. And then I'm going to take you home.
Right.
And then after hour one, I mean, after 10 minutes into it, you realize that you can't have conversation. And now you are. You're already committed 6 hours for it.
You know what, though? I challenge you to do what I have done. Two things. Let me tell you. One is if you're not feeling it, I have done this. And again, I'm recently dating, so maybe it's just because I don't care. Like I should care, but I just don't care. But I've been out and I've said, hey, you know what? I'm kind of done with this. Can I take you home?
Really?
Yeah. Cause I knew she wasn't feeling it and I knew I wasn't feeling it. And to me, at that point, it was just like, you know what? Let's cut losses. I got stuff to do. You got stuff to do. There's no point in doing that. So I challenge you to do that.
Okay, I'm accepting your challenge. I'm just imagining that moment when that girl walks back home. I mean, when she gets back home and she goes into her roommate's and, oh, why are you home so early? Are you done with me?
Yeah. I don't mean it like... I really don't think it's rude. I think it's more respectful to the other person's time to be like, you know what? I'm not feeling this.
No, that's true.
And I'll give you one other one just because this is funny. And I actually haven't had the opportunity to talk here in the Cultural Hall about dating and being single again. So indulge me.
he's doing some self-promoting at the same time, right?
Yeah, sure. Why not? The second thing is... people with their cell phones, like when I go out, I will I will, unless I'm expecting a phone call from someone, I will leave my phone in my car, or like I'll turn it on to silent so that I don't feel it and it doesn't vibrate or anything like that. I went on a date a little bit ago, and the girl was on her phone, right? And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, like, is everything all right? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. And she was just like browsing on her phone. And I looked at her, and again, this is probably me just being bold and brash and terrible, but I said, hey, listen, if you want to be on your phone, that's fine. I'll take you home. Otherwise, put it away.
What did you say?
Well, so here was the deal. Like, I was expecting, because I feel like that's a pretty bold move, but it was more than just like, oh, I got this funny text message from this. Isn't this funny? Oh, let me just respond real quick and then I'll put away. It was genuinely like browsing Facebook. You know, I'm talking to her and she's just browsing. Oh, what's going on? Is something all right? Oh, yeah, no, I'm just looking at Facebook. It's like, okay, nope, not the thing. So I said, put it away. She put the phone away. Date was great. She put the phone away and the rest of the date was really great. Great conversation, a great time had. And I just, I wanted to be at the end of the date. I didn't do this, but I wanted to be at the end of the date. I wanted to be like, hey, listen, do you realize how we had fun and you weren't on your phone? You may think about that in the future.
Consider that for your future date.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree with that, Richie. Totally agree with that. That is the worst thing when you're on a date and they're just on the phone the whole time. And then you're just thinking, well, obviously we're not interested in each other. If I can't be interesting enough for you to be distracted enough from your phone, then it's just, that's probably pretty frustrating. So that's awesome that you told her, and then she put it away, and then it turned out to be a great day. But yeah, that's definitely so frustrating when people are on their phones the whole time.
Anyway, we've gone way off the beaten path of this whole thing. So coming up in the second block, I'm going to talk to Colby Farron, who is also a voice that you hear featured in that hit Undo song. Again, if you haven't gone and watched the video, you heard some of the song there a little bit ago, but go check out the video. It adds a whole different dimension to this great song. I want to ask you three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall, then I'll let you go. First of all, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
Oh, great question. I just got called on Sunday to be an FHE I'm trying to remember what the official name is, but we call it FHE Mom down here. Mm-hmm. Which basically I'm in charge of like probably 8 to 10 people and to hold FHE inside my apartment every week. So I absolutely love it.
Remember, it's the treats that get people out. The treats is number one. The spirit is number two.
I baked the cake, Richie. It totally works.
Oh, yeah?
Totally works. Yeah.
What kind of
everybody cake?
What kind of cake are we talking about?
I mean, it was my roommate's birthday, so we did a red velvet cake. It was two tiers, actually. My roommate made it. It was really
Jeez.
Great. Red velvet with chocolate on top.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the whole family showed up, eh?
and did you say something really tongue-in-cheek for Provo where it's like, this is better than kissing respectfully cake?
Oh, you're killing me.
The second question we ask everyone here in the Cultural Hall is, if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Ah, interesting question. I don't know. I think really it just comes down to what the Lord wants you to be in, right?
Sure.
I think any opportunity where I can share my testimony and teach, I love to teach and I love to share my testimony. So I think wherever the Lord needs me and at any moment that I have the opportunity to do that, I absolutely enjoy it. I mean, I enjoy any calling, but I really enjoy those type of callings.
And then the final question that we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith. I think my favorite part of my faith is that it gives me a higher perspective of my life. I know that I'm not just some random person that is on this earth, and I'm just like some person in the universe who's trying to get progress in life. But I know that there's a higher power above us, and not only a higher power, but a Father who loves us. And it just gives me so much hope and so much more aspiration to become like him and to return to him. And it gives me such a greater perspective, and it completely changes the way that that I live my life, the way that I make decisions, the way that I go after my goals. It changes everything when you realize that you really are a daughter of God, or a son or daughter of God. It changes everything. So that's probably my favorite part.
I love it. Best of luck to you with this song and with everything that you're doing. Hopefully, if you have another song that comes out, we'd love to chat with you again, see what that song's all about, and see how we might be able to help you out with that. Coming up in the second block, we're going to visit with Colby Farron, a voice that's featured in the song Hit Undo. So we'll take a break, and we'll come back and do that in the second block here at the Cultural Hall.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails from people all the time. Here's one. Dear Dan, I keep hearing your ads talking about free virus and malware scans on any brand of desktop or laptop PC. I think you're trying to pull one over on us. We know nothing is free. We're not that naive out there in the real world. Signed, No Free Lunch. Dear No Free Lunch, we mean it. We really will scan your computer for malware and spyware for free. We know that if you have a great experience with us, you'll be so impressed that one day you might come back and buy a computer from us. So bring in your computer, no matter what brand of PC it is, to any one of our locations right now for a free virus and malware and spyware scan. Just check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Say goodbye to your malware and spyware. No free lunch. At PC Laptops, we love you.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 219, and we're talking all about this song, Hit Undo. We talked to Nadia Christine in the first block, and now we're talking with Colby Farron, who is joining me now via telephone as well. Thanks for joining me, Colby.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Richie. Love to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about this collaboration that you have with Nadia. How did this all come about?
All right. Well, I had been posting, and I have been posting raps and music videos for quite a while now, and Nadia, she had this great idea for this song about addiction recovery, and she wanted it to be a rap song. Uh-huh. And she was looking around for different rappers, and she told me later she was actually talking with one of her friends, and one of her friends, who was also coincidentally one of my friends, recommended me to Nadia, and she said, oh, well, if you need a rapper, like, there's this guy named Colby Farron. He raps, he's a member, he does raps about the church and different things like that. You could call him up. And so she actually messaged me on Facebook and then quickly called me, and that was that.
You know, I don't want to put pressure on it, but this is how the and I hope this doesn't make this awkward, but this is how the, when you guys are at your wedding, that this is how the story will begin, right? You recognize that?
You know, totally. It's going to start exactly like that.
So
it might have, like, more backstory even.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Nice. I've made that uncomfortable.
No, it's all right. There's no uncomfortable questions here.
Listen, no, I feel like you could do way worse for sure. So you may think about it.
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah. Let's ask you about this. So you're a member of the church, lifelong member, convert?
I am a lifelong member. Yes, I am. I grew up in North Ogden, Utah, and I have ancestry back to the pioneers, so I've loved being a member, and I've loved growing up in Utah.
Serving a mission?
Yeah, I served in Mexico City.
Okay. Now, this will be a terrible question, but tell me a little bit about your family. I'm guessing it's not just North Ogden.
Well, it's mainly North Ogden. I mean, my grandpa is from Idaho, And my other grandpa and grandma, they're from Ogden. So I actually do go quite a ways back, back to basically the beginnings of Ogden. So yeah, that's the general family history, just for those who wanted to know my family tree, as I know people come on here for that.
Well, you know, but a lot of people have a great deal of interest for genealogy, and especially genealogy of their favorite Mormon rappers. I mean, that's a huge, that is a huge market.
Well, there you go. That's like Matthew 1, but instead of for Jesus, it's for me. Yeah. So there's Idaho begat Ogden, and Ogden begat Ogden, and Ogden had another child, and then here I am.
In Provo.
Yeah. Well, now I'm in Provo, but I'm from Ogden.
What makes you want to rap? That seems like a bizarre thing.
No, good question. Great question. I'll simplify the story, because I could make it 2 hours long, which unfortunately I usually do. But in elementary school, each year, we'd have a talent show for
yes!
the grade. I would go and I'd perform, you know, and this was the biggest performance of my life every year for the grade talent show. And I would perform a piano piece each year. And I was so mad because I never made it to the school-wide talent show, because the top three acts from each grade went to the school-wide talent show.
Right.
I never made it.
And piano, everybody.
I know, right?
Every Mormon kid in Ogden plays a piano.
I know. It's like learning the Articles of Faith. It's a requirement to graduate primary. So sixth grade, my last year in elementary school, I was like, you know what, I gotta do something different. And I had been writing a bit of poetry, and I love poetry, and I thought, what is something different that's kind of like poetry that people would like? And so all of a sudden I had this epiphany, and I was like, I could write a rap. And I performed this rap with two of my friends at the Great Talent Show, and we made it. We made it to the school-wide talent show. And from there, I was like, you know what? Like, playing the piano is cool. I'm going to keep playing the piano. But rapping is different, and I can do it in a different way, and people pay more attention to me when I rap. So that's kind of how it started.
You know what the next question obviously is, right?
Let's see. Try me.
Do you still know the rap that you did in sixth grade, and will you perform it right now?
It's like 20, maybe 30 seconds long.
Perfect.
And I'll give you what I remember.
Do it.
It's about basketball. Here we go.
Of course it is.
All right. Basketball is the game we play, because are we going to be in the NBA? Yo, if you don't want to be a fool, then play basketball, because it's really cool. Yeah, it's really good to have some fun, but I never stop until I have one. Saying basketball is the best game ever, but yeah, I have to have math skills and be clever. Drive down the lane and shoot three, and then get back and play some tight D. Coming with this awesome and amazing game are threes, dunks, in the Hall of Fame. Play me one-on-one, yo, I'll bring you down. My mad skills are out of this town, y'all. Basketball is the game I play, because I'm going to be in the NBA.
Yeah!
Boom.
It's funny what you remember, right?
I know, right? Random basketball rap about my dreams of being an NBA player, and here we are.
That's pretty good. Sixth grade, you said?
Sixth grade, yes, sir. That was the first rap I ever wrote.
That is amazing. That actually was really good. I was sort of expecting, like, my name is Colby. Nothing rhymes with Colby. except for, like, surround sound in Dolby. Word. That's 30 seconds.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, I was rapping about my dreams of being in the Hall of Fame and in the NBA. And I wore my Kobe Bryant jersey, and a lot of people booed me for that. And yeah, it was fun.
So then it just evolved through middle and high school and more talent shows. Tell me that process.
Yeah, well, on my sixth grade graduation sheet that they had me fill out, I wrote down that I wanted to be a rapper when I grew up. And obviously, the wonderful Orthodox Mormon parents that I have have been kind of, trained in the lovely Mormon cultural doctrine that rap is of the devil. And so they kindly, in their most loving Orthodox Mormon way, told me, Cole, like, we love you and we want what's best for you, and we think that maybe rapping isn't what's best for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I, so actually for a few years then after, 3-4 years after, I did very few songs. I wrote very few songs and just different things for assignments or projects or whatever. But it wasn't until about junior year in high school when I really picked it up and said, you know what, this is something I want to pursue. And so that's when it really started.
Did they do the also very typical thing where it's like, listen, we'll support you in it, but let's not make it your only option. Make sure you get a nice communications degree or a business degree. Let just some, I'm not saying that you won't make it. That's not what I'm saying. We support you. Just, you know, consider having something as a backup.
Exactly. No, it was really funny because they said that way back when, but then I think it surprised my dad when he had to have that same conversation with me about a year ago when I entered college. And when he thought, you know, I would grow out of my dreams, you know, kind of
sure.
Like, I know, like, you grow up with, like, start out with the binky, and then once you're, like, a grown-up kid, you don't use the binky anymore. To him, rap was a binky, and I'm just a big 21-year-old using a binky still. But no, they are very supportive, and I did get this. We'll support you no matter what speech. But they are very supportive, and they've gone to great lengths to try their best to appreciate something that they do not naturally appreciate, which is rap. So I will give them a lot of props for doing their best to understand an art form that just isn't in their DNA to understand.
But what I mean, a huge credit. I mean, you say that, but it's a huge credit for parents who can do that, who can say,
right.
Man, you know what? Not how we would have done it. Colby, this is not the way we would have picked it for you. But you know what? We do, in fact, love you that much. Go for it. What can we do? What can we do to help you? Yeah,
absolutely. They're amazing that way.
So then tell me about what's going on now. You serve a mission. You told me where did you serve?
I served in Mexico City.
Opportunity to rap in Mexico as an elder?
You know what? Surprisingly, there was. I had a companion who was from the Dominican Republic, and they are so fun. Dominicans are such fun people. They're like, take any normal personality and times it by 10. So if they're funny, if they're a funny Dominican, then they're 10 times funnier than your average normal person.
Okay.
Or from any other country. And just any personality times it by 10. And he was crazy. It was kind of a good crazy, but kind of a bad crazy. And so normal crazy times by 10. And it was just really tough to work with him. We had nothing in common whatsoever besides rap.
Mm-hmm.
We both enjoyed rap. And so I actually used that, and we became the best of friends, as we often would have to walk 30 or 40 minutes in between investigators' houses, in between lessons, and we would freestyle. I learned how to freestyle rap in Spanish way back when, and that's what helped that companionship prosper.
All right, so, you know, I hate to put you on the spot, but freestyle and rap in Spanish feels like a dare, so can I put you on the spot again? Can I put you on the spot again? I know you've probably been home for a little while, so your Spanish may be a little rusty, but I would love to hear a little freestyle Spanish.
You know, I might have to pass up that opportunity. It has been a while. That was about 2 years ago that I was with him, and I believe in the gift of tongues, and I believe that was a subset of the gift of tongues that I got just for that specific time when I needed it, and promptly thereafter it left. So I'm not sure that my Spanish freestyle abilities are quite where they were back then.
Okay,
so
I'll give you a pass, Colby. That's fine. So you're studying music then at BYU?
Actually, surprisingly enough, even at a very progressive school like BYU, they do not have a rapping major, even a rapping sub major or minor in the music program. It hasn't quite hit the schools yet.
Sure.
And because of that, I'm actually also very interested in teaching. I love presenting any sort of message in an engaging way, whether it be through rap and music or through teaching. And so I'm majoring in English teaching. Teaching because I love teaching, and English because, well, I love words.
Mm-hmm. So
that's my major.
So then pursuing the rap sort of the rap, I sound like your parents. Are you pursuing the rap music then on the side? It's just sort of hobby at this point?
I would like it to be more than a hobby eventually. It is something that obviously takes a bit to make it, so to speak. I put that in quotation marks. But I would eventually like to do it full time. I would like to rap, even do some comedy, and mix that in with public speaking and writing eventually. Kind of like John, by the way, meets James the Mormon type of an idea. But in the meantime, I do have to pay bills. My parents have woke me up to that, like, reality. That I may end up wanting to, you know, get married and have children.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the meantime, I will be teaching, but I will be pursuing that as much as is possible so that eventually I can do that full time.
You brought it up. Let's talk about James the Mormon for a second.
All right.
What do you think?
What do I think about James the Mormon?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? He has done more for the growth of Mormon rap music than I think anyone in the history of Mormon rap music. He has pushed that into the Mormon culture, whether or not Mormon culture wanted it to exist.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah.
You've seen the latest video that he
did. Telling you why.
Yeah, telling you why. Just released earlier this week. What do you think about that?
You know what? He's pushing BYU. He's pushing the church. I like it. He is. It's kind of combining a few different cultures, and it's different. And I like it. It's not specifically the exact type of rap that I write or that I make, but it is opening doors for artists like myself who want to bring rap to a culture like the Mormon culture or Provo or whatever you want to call that. So I like what he's doing. I do like what he's doing.
If people haven't taken the opportunity to listen to it, we actually had him here in the Cultural Hall. It's episode 214. You can check that out with James the Mormon. We talk about what he's doing and sort of where he comes from. An interesting story, but the one thing that frustrates me about James the Mormon is this whole not a rapper thing. I just wish that he'd be like, yes, I'm a rapper, and that's what I do, and I'm talented at it, and I'm going to accept that that's what it is, and I'm going to share the gospel, that's fine, but this whole, well, you know, I'm not really, it's like, no, you are. I'm sorry. Sorry, you are. That's what it is. You are.
You know what? I've spoken with James a few times, and we've considered collaborating. We'll see if that ever happens. But you know what? What I think the part of his message that I do agree with the whole I'm not a rapper thing is so many people in this world, I think, define themselves by their occupation.
Sure.
Especially the artists who make it big. Like, okay, so-and-so, like Kobe Bryant, he's a basketball player. Or Eminem, you know, he's a rapper. I think if I understand what James wants to get across correctly, then what he's trying to say is, look, I am a son of God. You are a son or daughter of God. We are all children of God, and it doesn't matter what else we do. We shouldn't distinguish ourselves from what we do or our different weird characteristics, because in the end, we are all part of one big family, and we are all children of God, first and foremost, and whatever happens besides that is just secondary. So I think if I'm getting that part, then I do respect that much.
Okay. I know from visiting with him, I don't think he put it that well, so there you are, Colby.
I'll defend James. Or at least that's the way I understand it. I could be wrong, but that's the way I get it.
You talk about having conversations with him. Obviously, you guys both down in Provo. So is there like this underground Mormon rappers like you meet in an old abandoned swimming pool and everyone drops a beat and it's just crazy?
You know what? No. I wish. You know what? Maybe someday. Maybe I can talk with James and see if we can do that. The closest thing to that would be at the Wall at BYU. We've had a hip-hop night or two where I've performed, James performed, Najee, Mimi Knowles, and a few other Provo Orem rappers came together, and we had a hip-hop night at BYU, which was a first for BYU. So that has happened, but as far as underground getting together, doing freestyle rap battles or things like that, not quite yet, but maybe.
That, you know how sort of silly or ridiculous that sounds, right?
The
hip-hop night at BYU at the Wall just sounds like, okay, right? So where's the punchline?
No,
where's the punchline on this? Is this coming? Is the punchline going to be here?
Right. No, I totally agree. And I think it's something that's just happened because rap in itself is not an old art form. Rap music as we know it today has only really existed for about 40 years. And it's only really become part of mainstream culture and mainstream music in the last 10 or 15 years. So, like, even most rap today, it comes from where it originated, which was the ghettos, the gangs, and things like that. And that's kind of the reason that we as Mormons have this idea of, oh, all rap is evil because it all talks about gangs and drugs and violence and different things like that.
And but disrespecting women.
It's talking about different, you know, very immoral things. But in and of itself, I see it as a tool. It's like a hammer, and the same hammer that was used to nail Christ to a cross, that same hammer could be used to build a house for orphans. I don't think it's the hammer, the tool, or rap in this case that is makes it good or bad. It's the way that you use it.
Let me ask you, the video and collaboration that you did with Nadia talks about addiction recovery. Is that something that affects either you personally or those that you love?
You know what? Yes, I actually, right before my mission, I had a really good friend of mine who committed suicide after having struggled with a few different addictions. And so this song does definitely touch home. That particular person was a definite inspiration to me when writing the lyrics to this song. And I hope that people from this song can get that message of hope that there are second chances. And through the atonement of Christ, we can overcome them. So definitely, it is a personal thing.
Where can people find more music from you? Is it Colby Farron on iTunes? Is there that kind of stuff out there people could listen to?
I'm not quite on iTunes or Spotify yet, Richie, but I am on YouTube and Facebook, and I've been growing a following there. And just recently, actually, with Nadia, this song and video was my first officially professional production. Before then, I had done a few things, like, I don't know if you've heard of the Before and After Mission rap, that's one I did that got relatively popular, or different things like that. I did an EFY Girls thing that, at least in Mormon culture, got a little bit of recognition, but I hadn't done a professional production until Nadia came along, and just recently I started working with people to help me make my production professional, so hopefully I can be on iTunes and Spotify and stuff.
See, so Nadia already has made your life better. I'm telling you, think about it. If you need me to put in a good word with her, I'm certainly willing to do that.
I'll write you down as a reference on my resume.
Please.
I'll see if she's accepting applications right now. I'm not sure if she's taking it or if she's full right now.
I think it sounded to me like she was full, but maybe she'll let you know when applications are being taken again in the future. I want to ask you the same three questions that I asked her, and then I'll let you guys get out of here. Do you have a calling right now?
All right.
And if so, what is it?
I do have a calling. I am the co-chair activities and service coordinator.
Yes. Yes. So what does that mean?
What does that mean? Well, the co-chair makes it complicated. It's just because it's a singles ward, they like to have a guy and a girl as a part of most committees. But basically, I'm one of the two activities coordinators for the ward. So we plan the big activities that we do, different dances or different service projects and different things like that. I'm in charge of that committee planning those different activities.
So what's the next big one? Tease me.
Next big one for my ward. If anybody from my ward is listening out there, we are having a Halloween dance at a barn.
Shut up. A barn dance?
But yeah, at a barn. We got it reserved. We had to reserve it back in March, actually.
Well, barns are very popular in October.
Oh, absolutely. And so we are stoked for that one. So anybody out there from the ward listening, come to that dance on Halloween at the barn. We are going to have a blast.
Will you be opening up the mic and spitting a little verse?
You know what? It totally depends on the situation. You got to read the situation. If I feel like people would like that, then I may do it. If I feel like it might be inappropriate, then I'll stay back and just do my Dougie or something like that.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Great question. I have two off the top of my head. One, thermostat controlman.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
That exists.
Standing and applauding right now. Yes. Okay.
You know, thermostat controlman, I don't even think that, like, that needs to be a main calling. That could be a sub calling. But very, very necessary, I feel. The Sunday school enthusiasm enhancer.
Okay.
I feel like lessons could be so much better in Sunday school if we had more teachers who were enthusiastic. So if we made that a calling and had like one person just in charge of getting the teachers pumped every day before they went in to teach, then I think we could have more engaged students of the gospel.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. Those are two great callings that I bet you won't believe this. Have never been mentioned here in the Cultural Hall.
No way.
I'm telling you.
219, you said? This is number 219?
Yeah.
All right. Wow. All right. I'll take that. I am honored.
Colby, last question for you, then I'll let you go. What is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith would have to be perspective. The perspective I have because of my faith. The way I see everything, the way I see the world, the way I see myself, my future, my past, is affected because of my faith. I treat people differently, I see people differently, and I see my own opportunities. I see the way I can change from the past, and I see my own ability to do things in the future differently because of the perspective I have from the gospel.
I love it. Colby, thank you so much. Excited for the collaboration with you and Nadia. Again, the song is Hit Undo. And I think what we'll do is, as we play out the end of this episode, I will play a little bit of your portion from Hit Undo so people can kind of hear you and then get a chance to hear a little bit more of that song. But before I let you go, we hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Caught up in the thick of the thin things, sick of the trickery because the prick of the pin stings. Self-smitten by despicable decisions, see a wick has been lit in the midst of my big dreams. I hear whispering voices that keep bickering, sickening thoughts isn't then taking me off listening. And soon the light in my eyes starts flickering, wishing regret's gone, but they won't stop thickening. Hickory dickory dock, hear the clock, it's just ticking like a mystery bomb. My history is injuring my future and long. Have I hid, now I'm wishing that my misery's gone.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.